Okay. So here we are, TFT's SOS Chat Radio. We're doing it a little differently tonight. I had to do it after the SOS chat, not before, because I had a client. Well, I thought I had a client yesterday, but it was today. It was cool, though, yesterday, driving out to Oakland from where I live and having to deal with President Obama's traffic, only to find out that I forgot I had rescheduled it till today. And of course, it was rescheduled from 4 to 5, and of course, I'm supposed to do the show from 5 to 6, but I was traveling in traffic. So I stuffed my face real fast, tried to get onto the SOS chat there on Twitter. Stu and I yelled at each other, and here's the show. I made it. Oh, I'm kind of flustered, though. That's just the way it goes. Okay, so SOS Chat Radio. What did we, first of all, Jesse, the walking man, Turner, right? That's who he is, was SOS Chat's guest today. Awesome guy. And as usual, Steve Krashen. Don't ever call him Dr. Stephen Krashen. Just call him Steve. His son, apparently, is a doctor. Steve chimed in again, as usual. And I chimed in, as usual. And I think I'm going to talk a little bit about the chiming in today. I have, for a while, we talked about this last week, Arthur and I. I had mentioned purity, and people take that the wrong way, I think. But in the conversation on Twitter today, tonight, just now, I mentioned, and Steve Krashen mentioned, that high-stakes testing and the poverty issue are sort of one and the same. All the money being spent on testing would be much better spent helping our impoverished kids. I constantly talk about poverty because, you know, as a teacher, it's my experience, as well as, you know, it's every other inner city teacher's experience, that the impoverished kids are the ones who struggle, and it's common sense. So I really feel like there's just no need to argue any of the other nonsense that's going on. There is one problem in society, really, and that is disparity, wealth disparity, socioeconomic status disparity. There are more low SES folks in America now than there ever has been, per capita, I suppose, compared to how few really rich people there are. And all of this poverty is the problem we're witnessing. We see it most vividly in little kids at school. That's where it shows up. You've got, think about it. Many of those impoverished kids are coming from less than ideal homes. There's probably even a lack of recognition of, you know, severe developmental issues in those homes. And those things get discovered in school. Why? Well, schools are staffed, hopefully, by professionals. And we're trained to see that sort of stuff and sort of call it out and attempt to deal with it. And we're even mandated to, except we're not funded to do that. So we end up laying off teachers, which gets us to LIFO and TFA. It's just kind of a crazy, it's a crazy comment to say that something other than poverty is our problem. Nobody's been able to point it out. You know, I argue with people all the time about, you know, oh, the union with our low SAT scores and blah, blah, blah. The union clearly has, you know, people, first of all, let's just be clear. I don't remember where I read it, but I know I read it, and any of you out there listening, if you've got fast fingers, you need to find this stuff out for me and then post it in chat. But there's something out there that talks about the very first international test decades ago, we were 11th out of 12th. So this nonsense about us falling behind, and we used to be second to last. It's just nonsense. Not only are we not second to last, but and I've said this a billion times, take the NAEP or the PISA, I don't care which test you want to use, but disaggregate the data by SES, by socioeconomic status, and you find, not surprisingly at all, you find that our affluent kids are number one in the world. We beat everybody. Our poor kids, our low SES kids are not. That fact alone indicates that, and this is, I suppose this is where some educators have a problem with me, but if you're an affluent kid growing up in a decent home and you're getting all the things I got, I went to summer camp, I had after school activities, I had parents that read and talked to me and all that stuff. If you have that, if you grew up with that, school's a breeze. It just is. It's a breeze. If you don't have all of that, it's not a breeze. And it's not because you're dumb, and it's not because your teachers suck. It's because you lack background knowledge. I grew up from the second I was born until I left home, I was given things, ideas, concepts, food, dental care. I was given, just handed to me by my parents, all that stuff. There are just too many families out there that cannot do that now. Less now than ever before. When I was coming up in the 60s, pretty much everybody could afford to do those things. Not anymore. My mom didn't work. When my best friend's mom got a job, we were all freaked out. What? A mom with a job? Yeah, we're a long way from there, aren't we? Now every family is a two-income family because you can't make it otherwise. Look, there's very simple... This is not rocket science. When you are stifled due to poverty, I don't care if that's physically stifled due to poor nutrition or lead poisoning or God knows what, or if it's intellectually stifled because no one talks to you and they just tell you to be quiet and the TV's blaring, whatever. If that's how you're growing up, you are not ready to receive the education being put out there by teachers because they're putting it out there for kids like me that grew up with all the sort of what should be just the status quo in terms of advantages, a decent home, food, and health care. You know, kids like me got that and do fine. Low SES kids don't get that and don't do fine. It's shown in every high-stakes test ever given. The high-stakes tests are, I think, probably invented by realtors because realtors are the ones that go around touting good schools and bad schools because they could never honestly talk about good neighborhoods and bad neighborhoods. So they claim it's a school that is the maker of the goodness or badness of the neighborhood. That's bullshit. It's the neighborhood that makes the school. They're neighborhood schools. Who goes to the neighborhood school? People in the neighborhood. Why are upper crust schools pumping out such high test scores and the squalor districts are not? Could it have anything to do with the affluence or the lack of it? Yes, it has everything to do with it. It has only to do with that. And this is where it's just not rocket science. All these reformers and all, you know, a lot of people out there, even professors, you know, they want to try to make it complex, and it is just so not complex. Jesus. enough. Poor kids do poorly. Non-poor kids do just fine. Look at every high-stakes test ever given. So, SOS, I suggest that we focus. We focus on one thing. And that one thing is poverty. Because, like Steve Krashen said, poverty and high-stakes testing and school funding and LIFO and TFA and highly... It all comes down, all of it, comes down to where we choose to spend our billions. Right now, we are spending it on testing. The Common Core, as Krashen says again and again and again, as well as others, the Common Core mandates more testing. That's right, more than we have, and it's going to start earlier. They want to test kindergartners. I taught kindergarten for many, many years. I can't think of a more horrible thing to do than to test kindergartners. I've told this story a couple of times, but it bears repeating because it speaks to this horror show that we foist on little kids. My son, great student, bright kid, mostly A's, every now and then a B will show up. A couple of years ago, or last year, in middle school, he got sucked into a test prep class. Because he was a high three, and they needed kids like him to get fours to raise their average yearly progress. My son was, the moment he was asked, or not asked, the way the principal lied about it was she invited kids like my son, kids who don't need this bullshit, by the way, but they invited kids like my son into a test prep class. And the moment he was invited, he questioned his abilities. He started to question whether or not he was actually doing as well as I kept telling him he was doing. The reason that he was wondering is because he was asked to be in a test prep class, and he was lied to, and I was lied to. We were told that these kids that were invited to be in this class, the teachers knew exactly where his weaker areas were, and they were going to focus on that, be it language arts, math, whatever. Except that was a frickin' lie. And I knew it was a lie, and I waited for my son to take the class and had him report back to me. And he said, not only was it a lie, but the teacher teaching the class was explicit about the lie. She said, you, teacher to students, she said, you, students, are my little superstars, or something like that, and you're going to help us raise the school's average. It was pure test prep, teaching kids how to take tests. Are we going to now do this to kindergartners? So my kid was at least finishing middle school, and he has me, you know, to remind him that schools are behaving badly. A little kindergartner, though, how's that little kindergartner going to react to a test and to the pressure? What the hell are we doing? Drives me frickin' crazy. Okay, so that's kind of what I have to say about SOS and where I think we should focus. And Sean, Chalkface Johnson, I guess that's his new name, Sean Chalkface Johnson, who I think is in the chat room, hopefully listening, he said something on Twitter about, you know, nothing's going to happen until something huge happens. And I've been saying that for a long time, too. I'm trying to find his actual tweet. If we seek to reduce effects of poverty, then why focus on... Well, that's not it. Anyway, he's right. Dudes and dudettes, we're not going to get anywhere yapping and yapping and yapping about 7 billion frickin' things. We need to take action. The only action we can take is, I have a feeling, is disrupt the testing. Everything relies on testing. If we disrupt the test, if we ruin it, if we accidentally pee on it, or burn it, or lose it, then the system breaks down and they can't mess with us. Other people, including me, have talked about a strike, a real strike, an actual nationwide teacher strike. I would love that. I would love it. I would love to be on whatever committee writes up demands for what we require before we go back to work. It won't be ridiculous. We're not going to even ask for more money. But we would be asking for some autonomy and for some changes to the stakes put on these tests, the number of these tests, and how we assess kids and teachers. That would be on the agenda. We've also got people on the SOS chat who don't seem to get it, not even close. The one guy I'm thinking of is Chi-Town Stu, Stuart Roden from Chicago, who claims to be a teacher. He's kind of not. He said a couple of things like, change the paradigm and quit being so negative. Quit being so negative. You know, since rape jokes were all in the news a couple of weeks ago, why don't you ask people who've been raped if they should just, you know, get over it and shift their paradigm and not see it as so horrible? Bobby Knight, famous basketball coach who got the boot because he's an abusive jerk, was once interviewed by Connie Chung, a famous news lady, one of the first actual women anchors in news. Anyway, she was interviewing Bobby Knight, and he actually made that statement. He said something to her, basically, you know, if you're getting raped, you might as well just sit back and enjoy it. Well, Stu, that's what Stu is telling us to do with these tests and the test prep. And he's saying, quit being so negative. Learn to just enjoy it. It's going to be here anyway. It's going to be buggering you in your ass anyhow, so just learn to enjoy it. Yeah, Stu, sorry, buddy. We're not gonna learn to enjoy that. No. Nope. So, people, I would love for anyone to call in. The number to call in is area code 619-996-1651. Come on, people. I don't want to just blabber on and on and on. So I'll tell you what I'll do. Instead of blabbering on and on and on, I'll play some music. Because I just don't know what else to say. I'm so flabbergasted by the level of faux complexity going on in the education debate. Jesus Christ. You know, it ain't rocket science. How many of you, when you were pregnant, thought you had to take a class in order to raise your kids? You know, look, this is how things like this work. There is no class. There is no one right way. Teaching can't be boiled down to anything like that. You just got to get in there and do it. It's not a science. It's definitely not rocket science. It's an interplay. It's about a relationship between the teacher and the students. Teaching isn't even really what we do. We facilitate learning. Anyway, drives me crazy. So before I play a tune, is anybody going to call in? I'll give it a couple more minutes. Looks like I have a question. Gary Rubenstein, the man, great takedown the other day of Michelle Rhee and Students First. Awful, awful, disgusting Olympics nonsense. He asks, do I think that the Students First video, the one I just mentioned, will backfire on them? You know what, dude? No. Actually, I don't. It is exactly the kind of humor the right wing loves. It's mean. It's humorless. It's juvenile. And they believe it. So, no, I don't think it will backfire. And the part of the reason is there's not enough, you, Gary, and Sean Johnson, and me, and all of us little, lowly, nobody, edgy bloggers, you know, we're nobody. We're nothing. Until we get national figures calling this crap out. You know who would be awesome, actually, to call this crap out? Bruce Jenner. Remember that guy? You know who he is? The decathlete, the Wheaties guy, and he is the stepfather of the Kardashians. How about him? Why doesn't he come out and make some hay about this Olympic ad that students first put out that is so freaking disgusting? I tweeted a picture today, actually, of Vasily Alexeyev. When I was a little kid, this Russian weightlifter who broke every world record there was in just deadlifting or the clean and jerk or whatever he was, I put a picture of him up today because he's just a big, flat, fat slob of a guy, but an Olympian. And I was just, you know, thinking that the unfortunate actor that's in the video that students first put out, you know, there's guys that look like him that have gold medals around around their necks, and they got them while they looked that way. So, you know, Michelle Rhee and students first, you know, I'm just going to come out and say it. Fuck you. Sorry, everybody. So, only if people think. Arthur, what do you mean? Arthur says only if people think about it, and people don't always do that. I think Arthur might be answering Gary. Don't know. Yeah, I think Arthur, actually, you make a good point. People don't always do that. They don't always think. I think there's an epidemic of that going on in our country. Definitely with the leadership, definitely with the moneyed class. They're not thinking. Or if they are thinking, they're thinking about their own futures and not the future of humanity or the planet or anything like that. All right, so anyway, looks like nobody's calling in. So, let's play some tunes. What shall I play? Well, I've got some Grateful Dead I could always play. Oh, got a call. I knew that would work. I think it's Arthur. Is it you?
Yeah, it's me. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Oh, okay, okay. I was scared you were going to play some Grateful Dead, so I figured I better call before you do it.
Yeah, I didn't play it. You're welcome.
I don't know. You know, when I was a teenager, all my friends loved the Grateful Dead, and it just never grabbed me. It grabbed all of them, but didn't grab me.
Well, you know.
I just don't appreciate what everybody else appreciated. I don't know what I wasn't hearing. I was hearing them sing out of tune. It freaked me out.
That, yeah, that's something they do. They did really well. It was all about the music, and it was about. I play guitar, so for me.
I play guitar too. We all have bad habits, you know, but there's no reason we should dredge them out in public like this.
You're just mean, dude.
Yeah, man, I'm nasty. I've been teaching for 28 years. I you got to build up some nastiness after 28 years, or why bother doing it?
That's true. Hey, hold on a second. Gary is typing stuff. First of all, Gary wants to call in, but he's on daddy duty, so forget that. But he says
he doesn't have a telephone when he's on daddy duty.
Well, I think he's trying. Dude, Arthur. He is focusing on his kids to give them background knowledge.
Okay. Excuse me.
Okay.
No, I like Gary. It would be cool if he called in.
Yeah, well, here's what he wrote. He said, Pat Homer made a good comment today that the better comparison would be how the U.S. did in the math Olympiad, where we came in third and very close to first. That's a good point. He has two kids sleeping. And Shockface says, Randy Weingarten needs to cave on the... Yes, she does. And Gary will wake up his children if he calls, so that's why he's not calling. Okay.
I take it all back. I don't know. I'm so insensitive.
You really are. Teachers, we're an insensitive group that care only about the newspaper that we read behind our desk while handing out work. Right? That's all we care about. Can I get a beer after work after I hand out 50 worksheets?
Yeah,
that's
we'll go to the library.
That's what Stuart Rodin would accuse us of, anyway, because he taught in a turnaround school for a couple of minutes.
I'm afraid I don't know who he is, but he taught in a turnaround school for a couple of minutes, so he must know something.
He's Chi-Town Stew that you see on Twitter.
From Chi-Town, yeah. I don't see him. I don't know. I've only been on Twitter a few months, so I'm not.
He and I. he and I go back and forth, and it looks like Steve Krashen is typing, so as soon as he finishes, I'll say, so did you hear my rant about teaching isn't rocket science?
I saw a tweet that teaching isn't rocket science is actually more complicated than rocket science the other day, which I thought was really cute.
Well, that is
cool. Yeah, but no, I did not hear your rant, I'm afraid. I just tuned in just at the moment, and you seem to have nobody talking to you, and since you never invite me on your show, I figured I'd call in and be on your show anyway. So
you're invited. You're always invited. That's why there's a phone number. In fact, last week I even said publicly, I hope you call in again today because I need a co-host. But we have another.
I didn't realize you wanted me to call in today. I would have.
You did.
Well,
and
I did, in fact.
You are the co-host by default. We have another caller on the air, area code 412.
Oh, cool.
Who are you?
Hey, TFT, it's Tim, one half of the Chop Face.
Oh, the Slecker Man, how's it going?
Hey, buddy. Chi-Town student needs a little bit of education there. As I pointed out, what I say are the five absolute destructive parts of the reform movement: high stakes testing, VAMs, the Common Core, choice, and school turnarounds. And the response was, you have no idea what you're talking about. Those all work.
Based on, as my
co-host would say, has nothing to do, but they just believe it's faith. It's like a religion, man. There is nothing more out there. It's not evidence. It's because they want to believe it. They love it. It has to work. They know it works. Even in the face of evidence, it doesn't matter. Evidence doesn't matter to them. It's what they want to happen. It's frustrating, though. I don't know. So for me, I was the one who typed the Randy quote there too. To have somebody like her continually defending one part of, to me, the five pillars of education, deform, Common Core, and to imagine that it's not going to come without the testing, it's driving. Some of these things. We had the union blowout here a couple of weeks ago, but hey. I could beat around all these things, but this is good stuff. And I'm hoping in SOS, though, that we can really come out at this from a point of view that says, look, this isn't about creating union love or creating. We're out here to save schools and do what we're supposed to do. It's SOS, save our schools. And so let's bring some save our schools attitude to SOS in Washington and not worry about who we're offending instead of. Maybe let's offend some reformers, and I know you don't have any problem doing that.
No, but I think you make a really important point, and that is, and I've kind of been saying it a little bit, and just for anybody listening, just because I sort of mistook you for Sean, on the air right now is Tim Slecker, the other half of the Chalk Face. The other half would be Sean Johnson, who I thought you were when you were chatting, because you're in there as Chalk Face. But anyway,
right.
I think we need to focus on, just sort of the poverty angle or the testing angle, which, as Krashen says, they're intertwined. They're all intertwined. But I just have a feeling that focusing like a laser on one thing and then maybe branching out a little bit to discuss how that one thing affects everything else seems to me to be our best bet. What do you think?
It's a focus issue, but I mean, the other thing that we do with opt-out, though, is that at what point and how much research and how much more do we need to know that the issue is poverty, that testing doesn't help poverty, that choice doesn't help poverty, that none of these things help students that live in poverty, help them in education. We know this now. This is not rocket science. The evidence is totally on our side. All the empirical studies are there. What more do we need to focus on? I think we need to say, okay, look, we now know. We have the evidence. We have everything on our side. What are we going to do about it?
I don't think we have everything on our side. I mean, just because we have the evidence that suggests that you're right, I don't think that's enough to persuade the people who are trying to make money from this. And clearly, people are trying to make money from this. I mean, it doesn't really matter where the evidence points. I mean, for them, you know, how are they going to make money if they just go by evidence? I mean, and that's another facet of the problem. I think it was great what you said about these people believing in these things kind of faith-based, you know, based on nothing. It's just based on faith, because I do think there are people like that, but I think there are really cynical people who are just trying to get their hands on money, and I think that's another aspect of this.
I think they're trying to get their hand on money, and I think you're right. And in one sense, I'm not even necessarily worried about those people, because if you destroy the support for the reform movement, then the moneymakers have to go away. And the people supporting the reform movement are the ones who should be susceptible to the fact that an evidence-based argument says that you're wrong. Arne Duncan, you're wrong. President Obama, you're wrong. Sorry, Randy Weingarten, but the Common Core is going to come with all of the nasty stuff that we've been seeing on No Child Left Behind times 10. Guess what? You need to change your position and re-advocate for what we're supposed to be doing and stop talking about having a seat at the table. And as somebody once I've heard say, turn the damn table over and tell people to come sit at, and tell them to come sit at our table, because it's now our table. You know, the money makers, I mean, they're there because the people in power have allowed them to be there. If we get the people in power to finally step up and say, look, sorry, the profession has said, no, we're not going this way. There's no evidence. We can't go this way. In fact, if we do, we're going to have, you know, 3 million teachers across this country and parents who are going to absolutely riot. And, you know, at this point, if their child has to go through one more hour of test prep next year, if their kindergartner shows up and fails a test that says that they're not ready for kindergarten, you know, these crazy stuff, as you were saying, this stuff is going to come to a head, and we've got to convince people who can make a difference, you know, and we're the ones who are going to make that difference, but we have to do that by some form of action. And so I like the high-stakes test resolution in one sense, but at the other sense, you know, for me it's like clicking like on Facebook. Okay, great, I did it. I signed the resolution. What's it commit you to doing, though? What are you going to do about it? So AFT and NEA are against, have signed the high-stakes testing resolution. Well, great. Well, what the F are you going to do now about it? You know, so, you know, you're off the hook because you signed something? No, because now you're advocating the goddamn Common Core. So I'm sorry. Why'd you bother signing the high-stakes testing resolution? Those two don't go. You know, you can't have both of those. You can't sign the high-stakes testing resolution and then support the Common Core. You can't do them both. And so, people, we need the TFT, we need you, we need the chalk face, we need Crash, and we need people to keep constantly calling these people out in power. The people sitting out there waiting to make money are waiting to make money. They'll find a new way to make money. You know, we'll give them a different way to make money. But take this one away from them. And anybody who's got any type of pull in policy and education policy who is pushing any of these five, for me, the five issues, they need to be taken out, drawn, ordered, and then hung out to dry, because they're absolutely violating everything. When you're violating evidence and you're hurting kindergarten, when you're hurting five-year-olds, when you're proposing testing five-year-olds, you're proposing actually hurting five-year-olds. That's a problem. Sorry.
Yeah, it should be anyway.
I'm going to let you guys talk, and I'm going to go back and keep listening. So thanks for giving me the time, TFP.
No,
appreciate
my pleasure.
It.
Oh, anytime,
all right,
sir.
Buddy.
Thanks.
No problem. You call us, too.
Okay.
All right,
so,
talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, Tim. So Steve Krashen just is going to send me, David Berliner is a well-respected ed research guy, and Krashen just said that he's going to, with Berliner's permission, he's going to send some new powerful data and conclusions, a new study, I think, that Berliner must have done. So we're going to have a little bit of new ammunition to use against the deformers. So that's cool, eh?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, the thing about ammunition is it's odd, because nothing they do, I mean, these five things he mentioned, and I'd even broaden the turnaround thing to school closings, any kind of school closings, whether or not they're called turnaround. I mean, none of these things have been shown to work as far as I could see anywhere. And, you know, yet it doesn't dissuade you know, fanatics. I think he described them as fanatics, and you know, if he didn't, he should have, because I mean, that's what I hear from, you know, people like Michelle Rhee, who doesn't seem reality or logic based. She's just out there, you know, pushing.
Well,
Do you think they have?
Let me see. How do I want to put this? Do you think it's because there's just out of the 300 and whatever million people in America, you know, very few of them actually pay much attention to anything, and those that pay attention are watching, you know, the mainstream media, and there is no outlet for the truth that, you know, we keep talking about on these radio shows and everything. It never gets put out there, ever, by anybody.
It's scary, isn't it? I mean, we know about this one little aspect of what's going on in the news, and we don't really, I mean, at least for me, I don't really know a whole lot about, because I'm really focused on education, so I'm not as focused on other aspects. But since we know the education, you know, reporting and editorials to be so preposterous, I mean, it seems like a lot of, you know, national issues and international issues, I mean, we could be reading, we probably are reading stuff that's on an equally, you know, crappy level, and it's frightening, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly my point. I mean, what the public is consuming out there in terms of information is wrong, just plain wrong. So, your point about this new bit of Berliner evidence that we're going to get, as usual, we're going to be spreading it around to the choir, and the people that really need to read it aren't going to read it, and, you know, the people that we don't really care if they read it or not are going to read it and bastardize it and not care and ignore it and do what they do anyway.
Well, there is some good news today, TFT, even though it may perhaps be transitory. But the UFT just won, we won in court today against Mayor Bloomberg, who wanted to turn around 24 schools based on his desire to toss out as many teachers as possible, and the UFT maintained it was a violation of contract. It went to arbitration, and he lost, and then he took it to court, and he lost again, and he says he's going to appeal it, and he's likely to lose again, and so that's a little bit of good news. I'm sure it won't be portrayed as such in the papers, but it's nice to see the mayor. You know, I mean, now he's got a kind of the only thing he's got going for him is his drive to reduce big soft drinks. You know, I mean, if he can get people to stop drinking those big Slurpees, you know, then he'll have a victory on his hands. But he really looks ridiculous now, losing and losing and losing on this thing. And I hope that's a trend that continues. Maybe we can make it national. You know,
it would sure be nice. I mean, it's good to see the union thugs out there beating up the poor. Oh, wait, that's not what goes on, is it? It's the rich. It's the rich bashing the poor working man. Yeah, good job, UFT. Good job, everybody. That was good. Gary Rubenstein is chiming in, says the appeal cannot happen until the fall.
Right.
It's moot anyway.
Correct. He's absolutely correct. I've read that. But even the fact that they're thinking of appealing or talking about appealing, I mean, what's that guy's name? The Chancellor Walcott had criticized the UFT at one point when they were pushing a lawsuit toward the end of the school year, saying, "Oh, they're so inconsiderate. How could they possibly push a lawsuit at this time? You know, it's so inconsiderate for the school children who we love so much." And yet, you know, he turns around and does the same thing, and that's just apparently absolutely fine. These turnaround schools. I mean, I know people who work in these turnaround schools, and the atmosphere is just. I mean, imagine, you know, imagine like death hanging in the air every day, and that's where you're going to work. And in Long Island City, 3 months into the school year, they changed everybody's schedule. They changed all the children's schedules. They changed all the teacher schedules. So whatever you've been studying for 3 months, you know, forget it. You know, we're starting over 3 months into the year, and that's how we're making our school great. It was just outlandish.
Arbitration, he loses. That's not good enough for him, so he goes to court. This is all just purely about power. I mean, if there was any concern for the children, you know, at some point the war would stop. But clearly, the adults who engage in war, any kind of war, especially the edgy wars, they don't care about those they claim to be fighting a war for. The kids are literally collateral damage in this war. They claim, the reformers claim, the whole movement is based on helping our most impoverished kids, and our most impoverished kids are getting, you know, it's getting worse and worse and worse for them. It's just unbelievable. I'm so frustrated. I'm gonna take on a new moniker, the frustrated teacher.
Even more frustrated teacher.
The really
severely frustrated teacher. Beyond frustrated. You're gonna have to invent new language to express that. I think
that's true. Okay, so what can we talk? Well, you want to talk about the ad a little more, since that ad is just so awful.
Shelby's ad, the one Gary wrote about.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Michelle Rhee is Michelle Rhee. I think last week we were talking about how, you know, no excuses for ESL students. You know, no excuses. You know, we should stop making excuses that they don't speak English. So I mean, now she's saying we're a bunch of fat bastards. America is a country of fat bastards, and we have to. I don't know what we have to do. I guess Mayor Bloomberg is gonna make us stop drinking those big drinks from 7-Eleven, you know, those big gulps.
Right.
And I guess that should change everything. I don't know what Michelle Rhee is worried about.
I'm just so offended at the image of, you know, she calls herself students first, and, you know, Olympians tend to be young. They're many of them are just kids. And here she goes and basically ridicules, makes fun of young. On every single level, it wasn't funny, it wasn't cute, it wasn't accurate, it was demeaning, it was demoralizing. And if this was the Cold War, it would have been, you know, ammo for the Russians to use against us.
Well, let's be fair, Michelle Rhee doesn't treat her own children any better than she treats the Olympians. I actually heard on NPR saying, well, my kids play soccer and they suck. I don't remember if it was soccer. But she actually said her kids suck. I don't remember what her kids sucked at. And she was upset because her kid won a trophy at whatever the sport was. I think it was soccer. And
it was.
And she's
it
saying
was
how her kids... Oh, you heard it. Her kid sucks. And I'm thinking, boy, I'm glad I'm not her kid. And, you know,
well,
hearing my mom say on the radio how much I suck.
Right. Let's take it one step further. Not only does she acknowledge that her children suck at soccer, so they don't deserve these participation trophies or ribbons, but she has sent her children to live with their father in Tennessee. Yeah, she doesn't raise her. She's not raising her children.
She's not raising her own children.
No, she's rich now and married a basketball star mayor, and now they're living very large and gaining right-wing power as lefties.
So this woman who puts children first doesn't raise her own children. I mean, I was ashamed that I'm talking with my kid in the house now, but I mean, my kid is in the house. Well, my kid's 16, so, you know, usually she's waking me up instead of me waking her up.
And she needs to be hearing this and participating. Put her on the radio next time. I'm serious. I would love to hear from teenagers. I did
my,
one radio
my kid's
show.
My kid's got a very different point of view than I do. She doesn't think about this stuff a whole hell of a lot. This is not her thing.
Right. Well,
She would not be a good guest on an education show. I don't force her. I don't force her to think about the stuff that I think about.
Right. Right. Well, I wouldn't want it. I would just love to hear. Is she a public school kid? Obviously.
Yes, she is.
I would just love to grill her kindly, you know, just ask her about, from a kid's perspective, what, you know, have you noticed in your school career anything change or just anything like that? Not necessarily your kid, but when I interview kids, that's the kind of stuff I want to hear about, because I think they have the ultimate insider view on what's going on, and they know. Like, did you read, you know who Mr. Teach Bad is, Peter Gwynn?
I read him somewhat. Yeah, I don't know him that well.
He's hilarious, very dry. Uh-huh. He considers himself a totally failed teacher. He feels like he failed the kids. And he writes up these totally non-PC but painfully accurate blog posts about what it's like in an inner-city high school. And he did his latest one is, it's basically, you know, you break your kids up into groups, and, you know, there's always one kid in the group that does everything and two or three that do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's writing this from the perspective of the poor bastard that gets stuck doing all the work always.
Mm-hmm.
And kids understand this bit of nonsense, you know, this ranking that we try to keep secret and this group work that we try to write. It's sort of painful to be in school, to be the bright kid in the class or one of the few bright kids in the class. And, you know, because of NCLB and everything else, we've dumbed everything down. And, you know, bright kids are bored to death. That's the kind of stuff I like to get from students, from the mouths of the babes themselves.
Well, you won't get that from my kid. My kid likes school. She really is happy in school. She would probably live there if she could and never come home. You know, she probably regrets the summer. Well, no, she doesn't regret the summer. I won't take it that far. But my kid is in JROTC, and my kid wants to join the military, which is really strange because, I mean, when I was her age, I would have run 40 miles to avoid joining the military, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
Might have been more than 40 miles.
We have another caller that just called in. Area code 720, you're on the air.
Hey, TFT, it's Peggy Robertson.
Hey there, how are you?
I am good, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the show along with Arthur. Teacher Arthur G.
Hi, Arthur.
Hi, Peggy.
So what's up?
Well, I was just listening to Stephen Krashen, and he was talking about David Berliner's article, and I just wanted to mention that I was at a conference this past week, the Whole Language Umbrella Conference in St. Louis, where we worked with about 30 teachers that we were working with to teach them more or less how to become activists. And the one thing I wanted to kind of let people know about is the Schools of Professional Conscience that rolled out this fall. And I don't know if you're aware of it or not, TFT. Have you heard about it?
I've heard about it, but lay it out.
So the Schools of Professional Conscience are based on Ken Goodman's Declaration of Professional Conscience for Teachers. And the idea behind that is to kind of give the teachers a base of self-respect, really, and kind of a base camp to begin to move forward to figure out how they can fight this corporate ed reform machine. And it was pretty powerful. You know, we worked with 30 teachers. They were really excited about some of these strategies. In addition, another strategy that we came up with that we're going to put on the United Opt Out National website is a bank of teacher lesson plans to support helping teachers with learners to teach them about corporate education reform. Thresta Smith shared a great lesson plan about slavery and compared it to corporate education reform. And we just started brainstorming. We thought, well, shoot, if AFT can put out my shared lessons using Common Core, you know, why the hell can't we have our own base of lesson plans to fight corporate ed reform? So I'm in Missouri right now, but when I get back to Denver, I'm going to get that out on United Opt Out National. And I just wanted to put a call out to everybody. If you have great lesson plans to support the learners in understanding what's going on in education today, send them our way. But
awesome.
We'll have that rolling out this fall to go right along with the Schools of Professional Conscience.
Wow, that's fantastic. Send me all the links you think I might need, and I'll post them all around.
Okay, I will do that. So that's really all I had to say. I just wanted to let you guys know.
Thank you so much. Thanks for calling in and telling us. That's the kind of thing I want to happen, so good job.
Okay, take care.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, okay, so that's good. Yeah, I don't like that Randy Weingarten share your lesson thing that they put out there. I like this idea better.
You like a more focused group of lessons?
Well, I think it's more than a group of lessons. It's sort of like a stance. That's going to be publicized or put into practice via you know, the lessons. It's not, you know, the Weingarten British partnership thing is just a load of nonsense. You know, I've never taken a lesson plan from anybody. I may have, you know, stolen bits and pieces. Well, we all, of course, steal bits and pieces from colleagues we sort of jibe with, but but to go online and find a written lesson plan, maybe for me as an elementary teacher, it just seems ridiculous. But I would never do that. I've had teachers.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I had a student teacher who used to do that. I used to wonder where she got these strange lessons, and then I would look them up and find them on the internet.
Yeah, they're just weird. They're so impersonal.
It was pretty weird. It's a strange shortcut. I mean, I don't know. If I have a book that I like, I'll use activities in the book, but I won't actually just, you know, pull somebody else's lesson plan off the internet and use it. I'll think of something myself usually.
Yeah, well, it should be against the rules. I mean, if you can't, if you need something off the internet to teach an entire plan, an entire lesson, you're not a teacher. Sorry.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd go that far. I'd say this student teacher I had was using things that were, I don't know, it was, she was doing what was her thing, and then she pulled these things that were completely out of character, and I wondered where she had got them, and I found them on the internet. You know, I mean, questions she would never have thought of asking, and that was.
I'm not saying it's completely useless. I'm just saying that, it, like you say, it's a shortcut. It seems to me to be. It's cheating a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I steal from any place I can, but I've never actually done that. I mean, I usually have it in my mind. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to teach this. They need that, and I kind of go with that. I used to scour bookstores looking for books. You know, I used to work in Queens College. We had tons and tons of books. I would read all the new books and see what was good, and you know, most of it wasn't good. Most of it is bad. I mean, 90% of the textbooks I've seen were just, you know, garbage.
Like the professional development we get, most of it's just useless.
It's sad to say I've sat through much professional development that was neither professional nor development.
Right, the term itself is an oxymoron.
I've been to some good sessions, too. I mean, I've been to bad things, I've been to good things, but it's really, really hard. I mean, I never wanted to be an administrator, but if you're an administrator, you have to have a meeting. Well, in New York City, at least, every department has to have a meeting every month, you know. So you imagine, you know, you're running the math department and, you know, I mean, 2 + 2 is still 4 or whatever, and you have no new revolutionary way of teaching math, but yet you have to address your teachers about something for 40 minutes and I don't know. So
that's where it's
what are
ridiculous.
You going to do? I'm sorry. I'm really simplifying math. I'm probably offending all my math teacher friends, but you know, I don't understand math very well. But I wouldn't want to have to come up with 40 minutes of material when they're making.
Why would
you?
Why would you have to? Why if there's nothing to go over? If the meeting's moot, and there's nothing to discuss in the meeting, why can't you let those people get beer?
Well, if you're a smart administrator and there's nothing to say, you kind of get up and say a few words and let the meeting break up, you know, but
right.
Not all administrators are that intuitive, and some people, you know, some administrators might feel, well, you know, let me scream at TFT for 40 minutes because, you know, he gives me a hard time, and so I'll scream at him in front of it. I mean, you know, administrators can do anything for 40 minutes, and in our contract, it's actually mandated that there's a faculty meeting every month and that there is a department meeting every month. So, you
right.
know, if I'm an administrator and looking to become a principal, I can't really just walk in and say, well, you know, I got nothing to talk about this month, so everybody go home. You know, I mean, that's not really my path to career advancement as far as I can see.
But it should be. That's a much better, more effective boss than the one that yells at me for 40 minutes just because I'm an idiot.
Well, you know, in Spanish they say that common sense is the least common of all the senses. So you don't get a whole lot of that. Yeah, nobody really likes it when the boss yells at you for 40 minutes or then you have extended meeting days when the boss can yell at you for 90 minutes, and, you know, that could possibly be even worse.
All right, we got to end it, dude. We got 10 seconds.
Okay,
so,
man. Well, nice talking to you.
Yeah, thanks again for calling in, and do it every week, co-host.
I'll do my best.
All right, appreciate it very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Arthur Goldstein, my co-host by default, and hopefully I just made it official. Thanks, everybody, for typing. Sorry, Gary, I didn't get to mention that last thing. Gary Rubenstein typed that NCTM has some good stuff but needs to be adapted, of course, talking about the where to get lesson plans. As usual, thanks to Steve Krashen also for chiming in, and he's going to send me that Berliner stuff. And Slecker, who called in, that guy just knows how to rant, which is always great, and he's right. So let's get on this, everybody. Let's make reform go away, and let's help our impoverished kids. What do you say? Want to do it with me? Cool. All right, that's it. Thanks for listening. Peace out.